Resilience to stress is one of those concepts that we all kind of understand what it is, but if you ask someone to clearly define it, that's where we kind of hiccup and have different people have different definitions, but it seems like the most common one is that it's the animal's ability to be minimally affected by or very quickly recover from any sort of stress.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. When it comes to 25-hydroxy-D3 products, purity matters. Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy-D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Learn more at hy-d.info. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company.
Welcome to the Swinet Canada podcast show, brought to you by Wisenetics. We are dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the Canadian pork industry. So I'm Miranda Smith, and I'll be the host for today's episode. And today's guest is Dr. Andrea Ludman, who is a postdoc at Michigan State University. So welcome to the show, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so today we're going to talk about resilience to social stress in group house sows and impacts on their offspring. So I think there's going to be a lot there to unpack. But before we get started with that, can you first give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself?
Sure, absolutely. So as mentioned, I'm a postdoctoral researcher at Michigan State University. I'm working under Dr. Kathy Ernst, and for the past few years, we've been kind of dabbling in the realm of stress resilience in general. And this is really where I got my intro to pigs. I did my bachelor's in animal science, but I didn't specialize in pigs. But for the past 5-6 years, that's where I've been focusing. And while we're talking about gestation stress today, we really started in weaning stress. So I've been dabbling everywhere from gestation to nursery, grow finish, and everywhere in between. But our main focus recently has been stress resilience.
So can you give us a bit of an introduction first on what stress resilience is? What does that look like?
Yeah, so resilience to stress is one of those concepts that we all kind of understand what it is, but if you ask someone to clearly define it, that's where we kind of hiccup and have different people have different definitions, but it seems like the most common one is that it's the animal's ability to be minimally affected by or very quickly recover from any sort of stress. So the type of stress is going to really dictate what kind of response you have. So you always have to keep in mind, like, what context are we talking about? Are we talking about transport stress? Are we talking about heat stress? Are we talking about social stress? And so on. But it could be any type of stressor that we're focusing on and how that animal responds. So in our lab, we've been using pattern of cortisol response. So we're not just looking at, did that animal respond to the stressor, but also how quickly did they recover? Were they able to come back down to baseline, or did they stay chronically elevated? So when I talk about stress resilience throughout this podcast, I'm talking about the sows that had a strong stress response, but they returned to baseline fairly quickly. In the case of this study, that would be about a week after mixing. But, and then our other group would be stress vulnerable. So animals that completely failed to return to baseline and actually continually had elevated cortisol well after the stressor itself had ended.
And in your case, the stressor was mixing sows after weaning, or was it gilts or?
Yep. So we had a mix of gilts that were gestating with their first parity as well as second parity sows. They were grouped by parity. So these were not mixed parity groups. And our model was an acute social mixing event. So our research farm may or may not be exactly following what industry does. But we breed our gilts and sows. We wait until about 24 days of gestation to confirm pregnancy by ultrasound. Once confirmed pregnant, they get moved into the group housing environment. For our study specifically, we requested those gilts and sows remain locked in stalls. These were in free access stalls. So they had individual stalls with individual feeding, but then an open loafing area behind. So I had them keep kept them locked in stalls until 30 days of gestation. And then we unlock them all at once to have that acute social mixing. And then after that, these were stable groups, so we did not have new animals coming in. So it really allowed us to have that strong, big mixing event with lots of stress response and fighting as they establish their hierarchy. And then it just was stable. So it really allowed us to see, do these animals recover?
And so what did you see like in different responses? You mentioned some went back down to base level soon, others never fully recovered. Like, that's a little scary.
Right. Yep. So the one caveat is we didn't continue measuring cortisol past 1 week post mixing. So we don't know if they finally came back down. It was just, it took them a lot longer to recover from that stressor, or if they truly did just fall into this state of chronic stress and they never came back down. We can't really say. It would be a great next step in research is to follow those animals longer term. But we saw a lot of variation, and some animals had their highest cortisol value 1 day post mixing, but they came down by 3 days or 7 days post mixing. Some had a little bit of a lag where they maybe peaked at 3 days, but still came down by 7 days. And then we had those vulnerable to stress ones that I talk about, that they just continually climb and we never saw them come back down, or there were a handful that did, but it was nowhere near baseline level. They were still very elevated.
Interesting. So did you then also see a difference in behavior between those groups of sows?
So we're working on decoding video on these animals. We actually recorded continuous video for 72 hours following that mixing event. And the master student in our lab currently is working on that and looking at aggression, but also how much time did they spend in the stall versus the loafing area. So trying to get a little bit more at were there differences in the more general behavior of these sows, or was it strictly just a response we saw at the physiological level of cortisol?
Yeah, because it'll be interesting to know, because behavior is something that we can see, whereas cortisol, like, most farmers are not going to be able to you know, get that kind of measurement. So, yep. Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see if that is connected to a specific type of behavior.
Yes. Yeah. So we're very excited to see what that might reveal for us.
And then did you also observe then the piglets that were coming out of those cells?
Yep. So the bulk of our study was actually focusing on the piglets that resulted from those litters. So we ended up having about 16 litters total, 150 piglets, and it was a pretty equal split between our stress resilient and our stress vulnerable. And so we followed those piglets all the way until we did some targeted behavior tests up until 12 weeks of age. And then we took them off study at 13 weeks and we didn't follow them past that, which part of the reason was these were purebred Yorkshire litters. So these were not animals that were bred for the intention of being market hogs. They were very specifically bred for this study. So it would be a little bit maybe not as translatable if we took them all the way to market to also look at their meat quality and carcass composition, because purebred Yorks are not really what's going to be entering that system. But we did do a lot of work with looking at their growth performance throughout each stage. So during when they were still suckling on the lactating sow, when they were in nursery, as they went to grow finish. We also looked at skin lesions. So were there differences in aggressive interactions of the offspring? We also measured their cortisol response at weaning to see, do they respond to stress differently based on how their dams responded to stress? And then we also, like I mentioned, we did targeted behavior tests. So we did a social dyad at about 7 weeks of age just to look at maybe social interactions, see if there were differences there, as well as a novel object test at 12 weeks of age to see how do they respond to one of the more classical fear type tests. Okay. And I mean, it's a lot of data.
As yes. Imagine, like,
there's so much to unpack here. But most of the differences we saw was during the suckling stage. So these The piglets that were born to stress-resilient sows, they had slightly higher birth weights. They gained more during that suckling stage. And then, of course, that meant they weaned a little heavier. What was interesting to me, though, is that we kind of lose those differences after weaning. So my big question personally has been, so is that a piglet difference or was it maybe a sow difference? So were those sows that were resilient to stress during gestation, maybe they had better intake during lactation, which helped them perform better and just get those piglets more milk? Or was it truly something the piglets had been programmed epigenetically from that stress so that they just grew better on the same inputs? That one, we didn't really collect the data for that specific question. It's again, like, this was our preliminary study. It was a big study and it left me with a lot of questions to hopefully answer throughout my career.
Yeah, because like one of the questions that comes to mind for me is like, is the stress in the cells related to the hierarchy? So like, are higher level cells maybe less stress, or you know, because of that, they can grow better, or like they can have their piglets grow better, or like, so yeah, very, very interesting.
So, and hopefully we'll get a little bit more of an answer to that with our master's student's project, because with that, he's decoding all instances of aggression, not for all gestation, but at least for those first 3 days. And we're hoping we can estimate the social rank within each pen to try and get at some of that. Was it just a difference in social rank that was leading to differences in stress response? Or was this truly a difference in the animal's ability to handle stress independent of where they fall in the social hierarchy?
So any other results on the piglet side?
Yeah. So while not statistically significant, I did find it was really interesting at weaning. Those piglets from the stress-resilient dams, they actually perform better in the first week of post-weaning, so they gain a little bit more per day. But then if you look at nursery stage overall, which for our farm is usually around like 4 to 5 weeks, you don't see a difference. So they seem to do better like right after a stressor than those born to stress-vulnerable dams, but overall their performance doesn't seem to change once they are off their dam and growing independent on solid food. The other thing was that weaning, the piglets born to stress resilient dams, they actually have a stronger response to weaning. So they have higher cortisol we took measures around 2 hours post weaning than the stress vulnerable offspring. But by 4 days post weaning, there's no difference. So there definitely seems to be some differences, but it doesn't appear to be long lasting.
Like, to me, I'm thinking about creep feeding, because like it kind of gives like very similar results where, you know, the piglets that eat the creep feed, they'll be adjusting quicker in the nursery. So in that first week, you may see differences, but at the end of the nursery, quite often that is gone. So it seems very similar.
Yeah. Although I will say the thing that caught us really off guard was why we didn't take these to market weight for carcass composition or meat quality analysis. This was a molecular study. So we did take animals at 13 weeks for terminal sampling of various tissues that we're going to be doing RNA sequencing and whole genome bisulfite sequencing. So looking at those epigenetic markers. But we decided, let's just measure loin muscle area since we have these carcasses here just to get a better look at how they're growing. And even though there was no differences in the body weight or the average daily gain, we were very surprised to see that the loin muscle area of our stress-resilient offspring was about 26% larger than our stress-vulnerable offspring. And that was statistically significant. So even though at a glance they don't seem to be different, it seems like there might be some differences in how they are utilizing their energy for building muscle versus adipose.
Oh, that is very interesting.
Yeah. So that's one where I'm like, I don't know what to think about that. I would love to basically redo this in a terminal line and see what happens and see if this is consistent and if that persists at market weight, because at 13 weeks, these animals are about 50 to 60 kilos. So quite small. And again, those differences might disappear and level out by the time they reach market weight. But it would be really cool to look into that, because I mean, that would be pretty impactful for producers and consumers if you're seeing a 26% difference in loin size.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, no, we were very shocked, and it was consistent between both sexes of animals, and yeah, was not expecting that.
Yeah, so like that kind of reminds me of another study where we looked at enrichment of pigs and the pigs that had enrichment. So this was in the form of a paper like that was given 3 times a week. And those pigs also had a better lean yield in their carcass. So maybe there is something there that lower stress or a better like stress resilience leads to better utilization of nutrients.
Yeah. So I'll be very curious to see how this evolves as we can get more research done on it.
So are there any other interesting results or things that you're seeing?
There really wasn't too much past weaning. The only other statistically significant result we saw was in those animals we took for terminal sampling, we ended up collecting urine to do urine creatinine cortisol ratio, which is a little bit better than just doing it from serum. And we did see that our resilient offspring had elevated levels compared to our vulnerable offspring. That was not at all correlated to the variation in loin muscle area. So those seem to be completely different things. But it was interesting in the sense that like it kind of confirms that there seems to be some sort of programming of the HPA axis that we're seeing that difference in cortisol response at weaning, but also the urine cortisol should be pretty reflective of their basal levels. And that seems to be elevated as well.
So any other results that
Unfortunately, our behavior tests, we saw no differences in behavior in terms of like how quickly they approach a novel pig when they're in a new novel, new social situation. Same thing with our novel object test. We didn't see differences in latency to approach an object, interact with the object, activity levels during either test, really seeing no differences.
So what are some of the upcoming research trials that you're hoping to do or that you're maybe already starting?
Yeah. So one that is the focus of my postdoc project is actually we've retained daughters from this project, and I'm following them for multiple parities in order to see if that prenatal stress is going to impact their ability to be retained in the breeding herd and also their reproductive performance as a breeding sow. So those ones are on farm right now. I don't have any data to share yet, but it's one I'm really excited about to just see how that evolves. But then, as I mentioned, based on what we were seeing with loin muscle area, I really would love to replicate this study with terminal lines and a larger sample size and just see what happens. Because if there's really something there and this is replicable in both purebreds and terminal, that could be a really important route to go down if we can improve welfare of the animals, but also are getting more product per animal also.
Oh, yeah. You'll get a lot of people excited if that's the case.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So that's something to look forward to in the future then.
Yes.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads. We elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Okay, perfect. So to our listeners, if you're enjoying this episode of the Swinet Canada podcast show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends, colleagues, and family. All right, so with that, I think we'll get ready now for the final three questions. So the first one is, what is your favorite swine-related book or resource?
So this is going to depend on context and where I am in my day. I would definitely say the assortment of podcasts out there right now is my favorite thing when I'm commuting somewhere. And I do like the variation and time length between some of the options. If I have a long drive, the Swinet podcasts are great because they're a little bit longer. So I can actually get through a whole episode where my commute to work isn't quite long enough. And so I save the shorter podcasts for those. But if I'm in my office and want to read, my go-tos are usually National Hog Farmer articles as well as the Pig Progress articles.
Yeah, those are very good. Okay. What about a favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
So recently I've started reading Carl Sagan's Demon Haunted World, and that has been fantastic. It's really funny to read given the current like climate with science and everything. And we're in this age of, we have so much data coming out from so many different sectors. And the book is really about understanding what true science is and being able to recognize pseudoscience versus science. And so it's been really interesting. And I think it's a really good read, no matter if you're a researcher, consumer, producer, industry professional, any of them. I think it's a great read.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting one, because, you know, we live in a world where we have all the information at our fingertips, but it's very hard for us to figure out like what is real and what is not. So a book like this sounds like an interesting read.
Yeah,
for sure. Okay, so then the last question, in your opinion, what sets successful swine professionals apart from those that are not?
Oh, goodness. I hear this question in all the podcasts, and I've been thinking about this question for a while. And I think one of the answers I think of that I haven't heard yet is just being curious. I think curiosity is a trait that not everyone has, or maybe doesn't have an opportunity to express, but having that passion to continuously learn and ask questions and engage with others, I think is really important for being successful no matter what area you're in.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me on the Swinet Canada podcast show today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, so that concludes another episode of the Swinet Canada podcast show. So thanks everyone for joining. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. So this is Miranda Smith from the Swinet Canada podcast show signing off. Until next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.